Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles, plus a free professional measure and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Do you believe you are wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Head to Safeway this week for these amazing deals for their members. USDA Choice Boneless Beef Tri-Tip Roast, Untrimmed Twin Pack, just $4.99 per pound. Signature Farms Boneless Skinless Chicken Breasts, Thighs or Wings. Buy one, get one free of equal or lesser value when you buy two. Progresso Soup, 18 to 19 ounce selected varieties. Buy two, get four free when you buy six. Visit Safeway.com for more details. See you in the aisles.
What is our prediction? What's the prediction for Sunday? We heard the prognostication that it's going to snow, that we're going to have ice. It's going to be terrible. Do you have your snow shovel? Do you have de-icer for your car? Do you have your car filled with gas? Are you checking your tires? Will it happen? Who knows? We could have a 50-50 chance it won't happen, but it just might, unfortunately. I'm Johnny Rabbit. That's happening right here. We are with you and just a little over halfway into our very first day of the new year, 2025. And with some perspectives of the past, we welcome author Andy Theising. Andy Theising has a book called Mid-Mod-Mare. Interesting title. It's about Raymond Tucker, who shaped Greater St. Louis in many different ways. We're going to go back to his time right now. So, Andy, welcome to KMOX, and thank you for being here.
Thank you, Johnny. I'm thrilled that we get to talk about my favorite mayor.
Your favorite mayor. Well, that's a good thing. We've had a long list of mayors. Why is he your favorite mayor?
You know, I love the story of Raymond Tucker because he was so consequential. He changed the way the city looked, including he was the mayor who built the arch.
Well, that's true. And this is an in-depth report, the whole pretty big book, too. I'm telling you that a lot of details and people don't know. You've revealed a lot of the past, and it's great to read it.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I think that arch story, if we could take just a minute talk about that, I think the story of the Gateway Arch shows how Mayor Tucker's thinking really benefited St. Louis, because as people might remember, you know, the Gateway Arch was approved back in the 1930s by President Roosevelt. And, you know, then it was delayed during World War II. And then after World War II, it kind of started rolling again. And, you know, they picked the Saarinen's arch design in 1948. But then it got delayed with the Korean War. But there was one thing that was just a stumbling block the entire time, and that was the riverfront railroad tracks.
Oh, yeah.
And the Terminal Railroad just refused to cooperate with the arch. And you know what? The federal government was ready to walk away from the project, and Saarinen threatened to walk away if there wasn't just unimpeded access between the arch and the water, the riverfront, that there's no way that he was going to stay a participant. And then in 1957, Mayor Tucker, who was an engineer, he brought everybody together in one room, and they started working the problem. And at the end of the day, what they decided to do, instead of moving the railroad tracks into a tunnel, they decided to build a tunnel around the railroad tracks. Hmm. They basically just raised the site up high and buried the railroad tracks in a tunnel. It was cheap, it was easy, and everybody agreed to it. And the groundbreaking happened, you know, just about 20 months after that meeting.
Nice. That is very interesting. A lot of people have forgotten that elevated track that was down there. And everyone's been, downtown was a lot different place when we look at the riverfront and we go back to the 30s and the 40s. So many buildings were torn down. And some people said that was not a good thing.
You know, we can certainly point to a lot of examples where there was demolition that happened and it came at the expense of people and their quality of life. And at the same time, we can also point to things like the Gateway Arch, which really have added something to St. Louis. And Mayor Tucker even is on record saying he wishes that we could do projects like this without displacing anyone.
Mm-hmm. What about he was very involved in the Mill Creek redevelopment area.
Absolutely he was. And the Mill Creek is a very important and interesting story. So before he ever announced, before anything was announced publicly, he actually convened a committee of Mill Creek residents and business owners and the church pastors, and they had a committee, and they had the first voice on the Mill Creek Valley plans before it was even made public. And I think that shows, again, the kind of man he was, the kind of thinking he had. I think he really wanted what was best. And the community, the neighborhood, actually approved the plan.
Mm-hmm. So the input came from the neighborhood, and then, of course, it was totally done, basically done away with as far as buildings are concerned. A few are left, not many.
Well, you know, the original plan for Mill Creek Valley was to tear down a couple thousand units of housing and then in the same place to rebuild a few thousand units of housing. And that was the original plan. And it was some of the city planners at the time that actually said, nope, we need it to be all industrial. And that was when things changed and people were forced to leave their neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody liked the idea, including Mayor Tucker. Everybody liked the idea that we're going to get new housing, just new housing in our same area, in our same neighborhood. So there were a lot of chefs in that kitchen. There were a lot of decision makers, and it didn't always work out well.
Well, they did get Laclede Park, and they did get Laclede Town. Laclede Town, a lot of people don't even remember that anymore. It's been gone so long.
But you know, that really was a very special development, Laclede Town.
Yeah.
And you're right. I don't think people quite appreciate how great it was.
Unusual in its construction, unusual in how it was operated by Jerome Berger, basically, and I.A. Millstone, and people were kind of hand-selected who lived there.
That's right. And it had there was a write-up in the New York Times back in the day saying how incredible this St. Louis neighborhood was. And I always like it as an example of, you know what, we can do this. We can build a neighborhood that is fun and diverse and everybody gets along. It was almost like a block of almost a utopia kind of.
That's right. It really was. It really was a wonderful place in the beginning, into the first few years. And well, we won't get into all of the details about what happened then, which wasn't very good. But we know that the area is being developed still today, to this day. He did so many other things. I wish we had more time to get into his background. What is another thing that you might say, okay, Ray Tucker should be remembered and noted for what?
I think that the other thing he did was he created a lot of regional institutions. The Metropolitan Sewer District was created on his watch, and the community college system was created on his watch, and East-West Gateway, the Council of Governments, get started, even though it was implemented right after he left office, but it got started on his watch. And so there was a lot of there were a lot of institutions that came forward that have really contributed to our quality of life.
A lot of great successes. I was driving on his street today on Tucker. I called it 12th Street for a while.
And when he died, they renamed the street City Hall was on.
Yeah, right.
In his honor.
That's a great story and a great book. And the book is really just out, isn't it, very recently?
Yes, it is a new book. And I hope that people will, I hope people will go look for it because it is a great read.
Thank you, Andy, very much. Thanks for being here. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you and to your listeners.
Andrew Theising is the guy who wrote the book. The book is Mid-Mod Mayor, How Raymond Tucker Shaped St. Louis. Quite a story. We're going to have some famous firsts of St. Louis. Diane Rademacher will be next on the agenda here on our special Welcome to the New Year show. This is Johnny Rabbit here. Let's see, who else is going to be here? Oh, and we're also going to hear from John O'Leary later on in this hour. And we'll also hear from a representative, a very important representative of the Missouri Historical Society. My name is Johnny Rabbit. You're listening to KMOX. There they are, the KMOX Studio Orchestra. Years ago, as we heard earlier from Mike McCann, a former KMOX broadcaster, we did have a studio orchestra. Well, St. Louis was once upon a yesteryear, not that long ago, known as being first in shoes, first in booze, and last in the American League. But now, author Diane Rademacher, who wrote the book Famous Firsts of St. Louis, is going to give us the lowdown on several St. Louis firsts. Well, welcome. Happy 2025, Diane.
Oh, well, good afternoon, Rabbit, and Happy New Year to you and to Mrs. Bunny Rabbit also.
Yeah, Mrs. Bunny Rabbit will like that. I know your subjects that we're going to talk about will include dancers, a fictional based on fact character, a special tree, a certain society, even a radio station about famous firsts. So what do you got on your agenda as far as famous firsts of St. Louis?
Well, yeah, on this first day of the new year, I thought it would be fun to take a look at some of the things that happened here first in St. Louis, some with holiday themes or certain special anniversary. And so what I was looking at first, Precision Dance Line, the Radio City Rockettes, who become part of our American culture. Well, and at this time of the year, they're really well known for their Christmas spectacular. Mm-hmm. Well, back in the 1920s, there was a choreographer. His name was Russell Moore Kirch. And he was really impressed by the chorus girls and the Ziegfeld Follies. And he wanted to create his own dance troupe. And he did just that. And his high-kicking dance line premiered in 1925 right here in St. Louis. So the Radio City Rockettes didn't start in New York City. They started here in St. Louis at the new Grand Central Theater.
Yep.
And then 2 months later, they moved down the street to the Missouri Theater, and they were dubbed with the name Missouri Rockettes. And they were such a hit that they went on tour, and then they found a new home in New York City. And I think at one point in time, I read that there were three troupes of dancers.
Wow.
And they were so popular that in 1932, they performed at the opening night of the new Radio City Music Hall, and that's become their home base.
And they're still there. Well, they're not the same dancers, but the group is still there. And if a lot of people don't know about the new Grand Central, originally the Grand Central Theater, it was where the vacant lot is now that is being redone, I guess, for the new entrance to Powell Hall, right at the northeast corner of what was Grand and Lucas, now Grand and Samuel Shepherd Drive. Now, what's next on your famous first list?
Well, even Santa Claus, as we know him today, has a St. Louis connection.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the early 1930s, the Darcy Advertising Company here in St. Louis
right.
masterminded a sales campaign to market Coca-Cola as a winter beverage. Apparently, it was pretty popular in the summertime, but they wanted to market it for the colder weather. And so they wanted to create an image of Santa Claus, a jolly man, not a stern man like the traditional figures were in
right.
the old country. And they hired an illustrator. His name is Hayden Sundblom. And he created the image that we're all familiar with today, Santa Claus dressed in a red suit over his quite rotund body. And I even heard from a friend in Germany who said, we used to have a different image of Santa, and she said, but now we have that Coca-Cola man. That all started here in St. Louis.
It did. Matter of fact, started right in the building in which I am sitting right now, possibly on the same floor when Darcy Advertising was in the Missouri Pacific Building, now Park Pacific Building. And that first Santa Claus images were done at the main floor, first floor soda fountain of Famous Bar in the Railway Exchange Building. You talk about a sad state of affairs down there. And what we won't get into that, what in the world might happen to that building. It probably could get worse, but it's in pretty darn bad shape. Now, you have something about a certain society here.
Well, actually, there's two organizations during the season of giving. The Salvation Army started the Tree of Lights here back in 1947. They wanted to create an awareness campaign to boost contributions. And they thought if they erected a big tree with light bulbs on it, every time they collected $100, another light bulb was turned on. Sure. And so the Tree of Lights was first created here in St. Louis, and then other cities adopted the theme.
Great idea. 8th and Olive is where it was located, right at the old post office.
Right, and now it's located in Keener Plaza, a little bit more prominent location where we can all see it. Organization that has helped quite a bit during this Christmas season and throughout the year is the St. Vincent de Paul Society. And that actually started here in America in 1845 down at the old cathedral. Hmm. And person-to-person assistance is really one of their hallmarks. And they're active all year, but especially during this holiday season. Mm-hmm. And the organization, well, it promotes charity, and it's now in thousands of communities across the country. But the first one in the United States was right here in St. Louis.
1845, that was the same year the Mercantile Library was founded. Now let's go on to a certain radio station.
Right. Well, I think you're very familiar with that radio station, the Voice of St. Louis. It was the first major radio station to fill its programming schedule with the all-talk format. And that was in 1960 when KMOX general manager Robert Hyland took that really bold move and looks like never looked back. And that was 1960 when he did that. But the station started in 1925, so congratulations to KMOX for 100 years here in 2025. I'm sure it's going to be a big year for celebration.
Oh, it will. It has to be. Now, you just recently went to Poland, of all places. Why did you go there?
Well, actually, I went to Christmas markets with some friends. We went to Poland, Germany, and the Czech Republic, and found it to be very interesting and picked up a couple tips that I think maybe we could use here in St. Louis. We were just so impressed. I mean, it was just so obvious how clean everything was.
Now, you mean in all of these countries, then?
In all three, yes. I mean, the cleanliness was just remarkable. No litter, no trash on the ground. Even at the Christmas markets where people were buying things to eat and drink, there just wasn't any litter. And the tour guide told us that now in several of the countries, there's a deposit on water bottles, and so people pick them up and get the deposit money back, and the bottles have hinged lids, so you don't have little lids littering or getting into water systems. And just a big push to create a kind of a friendly environment and a clean environment in those countries.
What can be done in St. Louis?
Well, I don't know if we could do those things. I think that it might be worth exploring, but just to maybe have a major cleanup day, you know. I think we all feel good when we're in an environment that's nice and neat, and some of our neighborhoods, I think, could use a little sprucing up.
Well, I think you're right about that, and it can be done, because this is what we're talking about, being positive, have a great outlook, don't be negative, can't be done, nothing will ever happen. It can happen.
Yes, it can. And, you know, some of these cities, too, they have like a theme that they rally around, and we were in Berlin, and they have these bear sculptures. I guess Berlin being the capital, the big bear of Germany. Mm-hmm. And also in a smaller town in Poland, they have gnomes everywhere. They're 2 foot tall bronze gnomes, and apparently they started as like to express anti-communist sentiment. Hmm. And then they really caught on, and there's hundreds of them around this city, Wrocław in Poland, and it's kind of their theme. And I'm thinking, gee, we had takes in 2014 for the anniversary, 250th anniversary of the founding of St. Louis, right. Maybe we need a new theme that we can all rally around where the public can get involved and really, you know, find something to be very positive about.
You know, you're right. Okay, then we're going to have to think about something that they can do.
Yes, indeed. And even I noticed in other cities they have murals and murals to, you know, perhaps replace some graffiti that we see here and there mm-hmm. around. I know there's artists interested in doing these types of things. I've actually talked to one, and he said, yeah, you know, maybe we can get ourselves together. It might need a little bit of monetary support, but, hey, the city's flush with money, so I think some beautification efforts might be in line.
Oh, I think you're right about that, and there is a lot of money that's yet to be spent, but I hope it is spent wisely. Thank you.
Exactly.
Thank you, Diane. Thank you. And thank you for that famous first book, which is still in print, I believe.
Yes, it's at the History Museum. And actually, I now have it on Facebook Marketplace. People, you know, if they're interested, can buy it directly from me.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes,
It is really a wonderful book. Thank you, Diane Rademacher. We appreciate your being here, and Happy New Year to you.
Well, thank you so much, and it's always a pleasure to talk to you, Rabbit, about our favorite city.
You're right about that. Well, New Year's traditions, well, they have been around for as long as there have been New Year's celebrations. And one tradition, and a lot of people do this, writing a letter to yourself. Writing a letter to yourself about what's going to happen to you, to your life, to your family in this year to come. Then put it away somewhere, then open it on New Year's Day 2026 to see if things develop the way you hope they would develop in your letter to yourself. You can do it right now. It doesn't take any extra work, just a piece of paper, put it in an envelope, stick it somewhere, and it might be a very good idea. It might give you something to really think about. And I hope we've given a lot of people something to think about today. We have a couple more guests on the way here on KMOX. Kimi Awoshimi is a signature event specialist for the Missouri Historical Society and Missouri History Museum. What are they going to be doing this coming year? We are going to find out in the next few minutes. I'm Johnny Rabbit, and you're listening to KMOX. This is Johnny Rabbit. You're on KMOX. John O'Leary is going to be with us. I'm sure you know the name, and you're going to hear some interesting predictions, so to speak, from John O'Leary in just a little while. But right now, I've been doing programs for the Missouri Historical Society and the History Museum for over 30 years now, and will happily be continuing this tradition in 2025. And there's a lot more, though, than these programs that are going on at the Missouri History Museum. So we have asked the museum's signature event specialist, Kimi Awoshimi, to talk to us about it. Kind of give us an overview of the things to come at the History Museum this year, all of which are designed for the benefit of you, the individual, the public, and open to everyone. Kimi, welcome to KMOX. Good afternoon.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
I'm glad you are here. What are you doing today for the New Year's Day? Any exciting plans?
Well, I am going to go to the gym right after this, and then I'm going to eat a lot of food.
Well, that's a good combination. Why not? Do you have any special foods that you eat on New Year's Day? A lot of people have traditional things to bring good luck to the new year.
Well, I celebrate a couple of different New Years. I also do celebrate the Lunar New Year, so I'll have food specific to Lunar New Year coming up later this month. But for today, I'm just in a mood for a lot of desserts.
Oh, good.
That's what I like, and that's what I'm going to treat myself to.
Good for you, Kimi. What, tell us a little about what's going to be going on in the new year, at least in, you know, the next couple of months anyway, at the History Museum.
So at the Missouri History Museum, in addition to our ever-popular World's Fair exhibit, we also have the Gateway to Bride exhibit, and we'll be bringing a lot of programming to support these two exhibits. But we'll also have a lot of programs to support and entertain and educate our St. Louisans, our community that we serve. Today... which is the first, no, actually tomorrow, the Thursday nights at the museums. That's actually mm-hmm. one of the big things I want to talk about. Thursday night at nights at the museum, you may already know this, but every Thursday of the year, we have a programming at Thursday nights, and we bring something that's fun, that's educating, but just an opportunity for our community to come together and just be together and learn something together, learn from each other, and just celebrate the space that we call, that's ours. And for in January, we'll have some conversations. We'll have conversations around emancipation. We'll have conversations around Bayard Rustin, who's a native St. Louisan, who was a native St. Louisan. And we'll also have conversations to support LGBTQIA plus untold stories, which ties into our Gateway to Pride exhibit that we have. Mm-hmm. And at the end of January, we'll have Lunar New Year celebration, and we'll be focusing on Korean New Year this year.
Now, how does the Korean New Year different than the Chinese New Year?
Well, it's just culture, just how the culture has evolved in that specific country. But it's the same dates. So most of East Asian countries celebrate Lunar New Year, which is usually at the same time. But the culture, the way the specific cultures of the country celebrate is different. So we have had Chinese New Year. We celebrated that a couple of years ago. Last year, we celebrated Lunar New Year in the Vietnamese fashion. And this year, we're going to be celebrating it in Korean fashion.
Very interesting. And these are the things that go on. And most of these events are free, I would imagine.
All of the events are free, yes.
That's good. All. Hey, what about stuff that I'm going to be doing with you this year?
Yes, yes. Well, how about you tell us about, well, the next event that we have with you is on May 13th, and it's about you growing up in St. Louis. So maybe you tell us what we can expect to hear.
Tuesday, May 13th, growing up in St. Louis, and we're going to take a look at what people wore in some cases. Many of the pictures that we'll show will be from the Missouri Historical Society Library and Archives, which is at 225 South Skinker, open to the public, a great place to visit. And when you go, you'll see nobody's here, which is unfortunately true. People need to find out about that place. But they have a wonderful collection of clothing, for example, that has been collected over the years. I was just looking at a list of things they got in 1946 of children's clothes, and that's, we're going to show that type of thing, and then what kids did over the years. How do they play? Are there games that still go on today that used to be? What kind of toys did they have? And many of the things we will show are from the photographs in the Missouri Historical Museum or Society collection, of which is, who knows how much stuff is there. You never see it. It's basically underground over in the building on Skinker. So that's a little bit. We'll be talking about education and about schools and Susan Blow and the first public kindergarten in the United States, which is has been redone. It's in the Carondelet Historical Society building in Michigan. And so that's Tuesday, May 13th. And what is 10? When does that start? 10 in the morning or is 10:30?
So the program, the actual presentation part will start at 11, but we'll probably have some supporting activities that will start at about 10 o'clock. We'll have, like Ron, you mentioned, we'll have some things on display from our collections, and that will start at about 10 a.m. And it will go until 1 o'clock. But the actual presentation in our auditorium will go from 11 to 12.
And when you go to the, I'm just thinking about the gym. My wife has said, we've got to go back to the Y and start doing some exercises.
Yes.
And I really do. And it's great to do. But do you do a lot of walking at your gym? Is it like a YMCA or is it something else?
Well, there is a walking space. Mm-hmm. I usually run when I'm in the gym. I like to run and I like to do a little bit of weights. I love walking outside in nature. It's a little cold today, but as much as I can, I would rather walk outside.
That makes a lot of sense. Now, I've got another program, others coming up, like Tuesday, August 12th.
Yes, we've got you talking about the Arch, and we're going to be celebrating the 60th anniversary of the Arch this year.
It's going to be an interesting show. We certainly have a lot of photographs to show of various things. The things that used to be there, not just the arch itself in its completed form, but as it was being built, what was on the riverfront, the boats, the Goldenrod, the Admiral, etc. And also just looking at that area, what was there? There were the houses and buildings and offices, things went really right down to the levee. I mean, it was a crowded area and that was all cleared out and away. But we're going to look at what was there. And even at a period of time that it was the largest parking lot ever in St. Louis. And that's where all the buses went down there and people parked for downtown. It was, interesting to look at how it has developed and what's going on today. And how wonderful the arch looks after all these years. It looks like it's brand new.
Right. That's so true.
So we'll talk about that and talk about the construction of the arch and Eero Saarinen and how it all came about and what the design of the arch, where it came from. It came from time in antiquity. It's not just something that looks new, but it has a past as far as the design is concerned. And then we're going to have the second annual Johnny Rabbit Lecture. That's going to be Tuesday, December 9th, I believe.
Yes.
And we're going to be there. These programs, lectures, or whatever you want to call them, are in the Desmond Lee Auditorium at the Missouri History Museum. Parking is free. It's free to get in. It's even free to get out. What are we going to do that day? Do you have any plans, or are we still too early to decide?
I think it's a little early, but we would just love to hear from you, and you always bring your friends in tow, and we're super excited about that. And we always have a fun time, so we'll just look forward to seeing what you put together for us.
All right, and we will put something together, I think, that will be enjoyable for all. Thank you very, very much, Kimmy Awoshimi, if I pronounced that properly.
Yes, you did.
It was a tough one. Thanks a lot. Happy New Year to you. Have fun, and have fun having desserts. Lots of them.
Happy New Year to you, too.
Okay. Well, we're going to talk about motivation. One of the most motivational people I have ever heard of is John O'Leary. He is going to be with us in the next few minutes. You're listening to the Johnny Rabbit. Welcome to the New Year Show on KMOX. It's 16 minutes now till 1. Motivation. Motivation has been a key element with all our KMOX on-air radio visitors today. And that's what our final guest's philosophy is, in part based on motivation. He even publishes motivational messages on the internet and a heck of a lot more. Now, you may know John O'Leary, may read about John O'Leary's life, a life that came so close to being snuffed out at the age of 9 by fire. At that terrible time, he was given a 1% chance of surviving. 1%. Oh, I'm sorry, our time's too limited for me to relate John O'Leary's story. It is an amazing story, as we don't want to take away what John wants to talk about today. But you can find out more in his best-selling book, and it is a great read, On Fire. John O'Leary, good afternoon, and thanks for taking the time to be with us in KMOX.
Johnny Rabbit, I am so honored to be on this program with you. I've been looking up to you for decades.
Oh, my goodness.
And you are my grandmother, who is my role model, man. You are her, like, hero.
Oh, my.
So I lost my grandmother about 4 years ago, but to be on the radio today with her hero, man, this is an honor. So thank you for putting me on.
Gosh, thank you. What a surprise. How very nice of you. So, John, what is your advice in meeting the challenges, and there are a lot of them, in 2025?
Yeah, well, I think there's nothing new under the sun. So I think some of what I say, many of your listeners, including yourself, won't be surprised to hear. But what you focus on in life will expand. And the more we take in negativity, the more we pursue what's wrong and broken with our lives or the world, the more we're going to see more of that take place in our lives and in the world. And so one of the first things I would encourage our listeners to do on January 1 and again on January 2nd is to look east, man. Watch the sun rise in the freest country in the history of the world, and be in awe, be grateful for what we've got. I encourage my wife and my kids and those who follow me online to pursue gratitude, to make it a habit. And it may sound small, it may sound trite, it may sound like you tried that before and it wasn't effective. But if you want your life to get better, I think you want to start focusing on the things that are already right with it and then build from there. So that's going to pour the foundation thick.
What's right with your life? That's a good thing to think about. You know, you mentioned that. I was thinking of a little section toward the end of your book on fire. It's attributed to John Lennon. Everything will be all right in the end. So if it's not all right, it is not yet the end. So you use it to explain redemption and that there's always a miracle right around the corner.
Well, and I learned that. Yeah, I mentioned before my grandmother, and yes. I also learned that from my parents. My dad has had Parkinson's disease for 35 years now, and his life is far from easy. These days, he struggles physically with speech. He's unable to move, ambulate, all that kind of stuff, Johnny. However, he's one of the most optimistic, one of the most joyful individuals I've ever met. He has a strong faith. I think faith on the front side of the new year is incredibly important to recognize life is about something far bigger than the struggles of the day. My dad lives that out in his life, and he taught it to his six kids, including the one you're on the phone with right now.
Yeah. Now, your book On Fire came out about 8 years ago, I believe. It's still being sold. It's a definite big bestseller. And you've got a new book. What's your most recent book?
Well, you can talk about that, and also there's a cool piece about On Fire we'll come back to, but okay. The more recent book is called In Awe, and that's a book was written ultimately about how to live with a little bit more joy in your life. I was raising these kids, and when you're in the throes, the trenches of raising little ones, it can seem like an awful lot of work. It can seem kind of hard and taxing, but I would also watch as we're going through raising four little kids how joyful these kids were. And I wondered, like, what is it that these children have as children innately, not just them, but their neighbors, their friends, they all have it, that we sometimes lose sight of as we age. And so I just identified some of the things that these little ones were doing that if we did more of as adults, we would have a little bit more joy in our lives. So that's what In Awe is about. But coming back to On Fire just for a moment,
sure, of course.
About 8 years ago, the book came out. And there was a friend of mine who read it in Las Vegas, and she asked if we'd ever consider turning that into a movie. And of course, the answer is no. Like, who would consider turning their life story into a movie? We had not, but she recommended we try. So for the last 7.5 years, Johnny, we worked to turn this story. Jack Buck from Camo X, of course, is a huge part of it. And the nurses at Mercy are a huge part of it. And so many individuals from around the country and around the world were a big part of this little boy's survival story. But the cool thing is there's a director in Hollywood named Sean McNamara. This year he did a movie called Reagan that came out and did very well in the box office.
Sure did.
Did Soul Surfer before that. He's done more than 50 movies. He's directed our film. It's called On Fire. It's the first movie to be 100% shot in St. Louis, Missouri, and I think in the last 12 years. There was a tax credit passed in order to help this thing happen. They filmed it on site in location. William H. Macy plays our friend Jack Buck. John Corbett plays my dad. So there's real talent behind this thing. And it's going to be rolling out probably in October of 2025. So one more thing for your listeners to look forward to.
Yeah, right. Wait, our late friend Jack Buck, how did he play a major role in your life?
Well, you knew Jack, and you knew him intimately, and you knew him professionally and personally. What a role model he was and remains. So Jack had heard the night I was burned that a little boy was burned and was expected to die. And we all hear these news stories, and it's always like, well, what do you do with that? The following day, Jack Buck leaves the comfort of his home, hops into his old Lincoln Town car, drives out to Mercy Hospital through the snow, Johnny, and visits a little boy named John O'Leary. He encouraged me with the expression, kid, wake up. When you get out of here, we're going to celebrate your survival at John O'Leary Day at the ballpark. And then he leaves my room. I'm transformed, even though I can't see him because my eyes are swollen shut. I now have something to strive for. He leaves. He starts crying. One of the nurses comes over to comfort him, but ultimately explains that the little boy is not going to survive. And then the following day, Johnny Rabbit, Jack Buck, your friend, decides to come back and pay me a second visit and say the words, kid, wake up. You're going to survive. Keep fighting. John O'Leary Day at the ballpark will make it all worthwhile. And so those visits went on for the 5 months that I was in hospital. Wow. When he went out of town for spring training, he would send either injured Cardinal players. Vance Leick was injured for a while, and Ozzie was injured for a while. He also sent the football Cardinals coach, Gene Stallings, hockey players like Gino Cavallini. So this became a movement of love and encouragement for this little boy. And to put a bow on the story, when I finally got out of hospital in August that summer, Jack Buck held John O'Leary Day at the ballpark. We met all the Cardinals one by one in the locker room, went up that night and broadcast the ball game together. So your friend and those of us who've been listening to KMUX for a while, our friend, he changed my life. He saved my life. And eventually he even taught me how to write again. And there's a whole story behind that.
That's wonderful. John O'Leary, thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you for your good counsel, your positive thoughts. Thank you, too. I know you're vacationing, but thank you for the time to talk with us and our listeners today. We appreciate it a lot.
Thank you, Johnny.
John O'Leary. I'm Johnny Rabbit. This is KMOX. Thanks to all of you listening today. I hope it's been inspirational. I hope it's been motivational. And now, as the late Charles Osgood would say, I'm going to see you on the radio, KMOX radio, that is, this coming Sunday morning at 8:50. And that time, we're going to take you back in time to St. Louis in 1966. Didn't seem that long ago, but it was. And I'm going to be presenting a program at the Center of Clayton about the 60s in St. Louis. That's on the 28th of this month. Well, for now, this is it. This is our show for today. Thank you for being here. I hope you found something worthwhile listening to today and it'll make for a better year. This is yours truly, Johnny Rabbit on KMOX.